The Gemini program was a two-man spacecraft that took its name from the Gemini star constellation. It is often called America's bridge to the moon because it proved many of the techniques needed to put a man on the moon. There were 12 Gemini spacecraft, 10 of them manned. In the final months of 1965, NASA planned two missions, Gemini 6 and Gemini 7. The first was to prove that two satellites could rendezvous in orbit and then dock. First, an Atlas Agena D rocket would be launched from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, placing the Agena stage into orbit. An hour and a half later, the Gemini 6 would be launched as the Agena D completed its first orbit. Astronauts Wally Schirra and Tom Stafford would guide Gemini 6 to rendezvous with the Agena D and dock with it. The co-joined craft would orbit for some time before undocking. Gemini 6 would then return to Earth. The Agena D would remain in orbit. That would prove that the Apollo Lunar Module could find and dock with the Apollo Command Module in orbit around the Moon. A month later, Gemini 7 would be launched with astronauts Frank Borman and Jim Lovell on a two-week mission. The aim would be to prove that astronauts could survive in space for the 2 weeks it would take to go to the Moon and back. Not that Frank and Jim were going to the Moon. They would be orbiting the Earth 206 times before splashing down, having gone no more than 300 kilometres from the Earth. Unfortunately, all did not go to plan. On October 25, the Atlas Agena D rocket failed to reach orbit. It would take months to procure another and get it ready for launch. This would leave Wally and Tom twiddling their fingers and set the race to the moon back, threatening the by now dead Kennedy's challenge to get to the moon by the end of the 1960s decade. The initial reaction by NASA officials was to plan a launch of Gemini 7 as soon as they could and to fly Gemini 6 early in 1966. Then, some bright spark suggested that they fly the two spacecraft simultaneously and that they could rendezvous, but not dock. NASA management approved, and so it came to pass that 55 years ago this month, the people of the world were amazed by the exploits of Wally, Tom, Frank, and Jim.
And Wally Schirra commanded Gemini 6, which flew in the first rendezvous mission when Wally guided his ship to within a foot of Gemini 7. I was on Gemini 7, and watching Gemini 6 approach from below was quite a sight at night. Now, Wally and his co-pilot, Tom Stafford, graduated along with me from the Naval Academy. Tom held up a sign saying, "Beat Army." I took a picture, and poor Borman, the lone West Pointer, had to sit through the highest Beat Army rally in Navy's history.
Gemini 7 launched first on December the 4th. Gemini 6, now renamed Gemini 6A, followed on December 15. 6 hours later, the two craft were only meters apart and the crew were waving merrily to each other. After several hours manoeuvring around each other, the two craft separated and the crews went to sleep. The crew were serenaded by Jack Jones with a reworded version of the song "Hello Dolly." Now please do pay particular attention to the lyrics, particularly if you are familiar with the usual renditions of "Hello Dolly." For example, the lines, "All systems go, Wally. You're 4-0, Wally. Tom, that's Navy jazz for razzmatazz." The early astronauts were nearly all seconded to NASA from various branches of the United States Armed Services. Tom Stafford was an Air Force officer, so Jack Jones thought he might not be familiar with Wally Schirra's Navy customs and language. After the musical bridge, Jack Jones reverts to the traditional lyrics of Hello Dolly.
Hello, Wally, this is Jack Jones. Wally, it's so nice to know you're up where you belong. All systems go, Wally, you're 4-0. Wally, Tom, that's Navy jazz for razzmatazz. You can't go wrong in Wally Earth's turning. Midnight oil was burning to get you your request from now and way back when. So, set with a wax, fellas, loosen up and relax, fellas. See you back in Houston town again.
Recently, NASA historian Bill Barry gave this explanation of Hello, Wally.
After the astronauts take a nap, NASA uses music to wake them up. We asked the space agency's chief historian, Bill Barry, to take us back.
Actually, Marco, it started back in the Gemini program in 1965. Wally Schirra and Tom Stafford. And Wally was known as a big jokester. And I suspect he was surprised by another astronaut who serenaded them with Hello, Dolly to start the day one morning.
Why Hello, Dolly? Who selected that?
I suspect there's probably some inside joke knowing Wally Schirra. But
okay.
I must thank Space Association member Michael Abdillah for assisting me in working out the lyrics of Jack Jones's song. In February of 2012, a gala function was held at the Kennedy Space Center to celebrate the 50th anniversary of John Glenn's orbital spaceflight. In attendance were all of the surviving Project Mercury astronauts, including Wally Schirra. The master of ceremonies was Jim Lovell. Here is how he introduced Wally and how Wally responded.
Okay, the next on the list, of course, is our good friend Wally Schirra. Wally, Video Wally. Now, let me mention his video and his music. Wally was so famous that Jack Jones recorded his very own song, Hello, Wally. Wally, would you come up and say a few words?
Hello, Wally. This is Jack Jones. Wally, it's so nice to know you're up where you belong. All systems go. Wally, you're 4-0. Wally, Tom, that's Navy jazz for razzmatazz. You can't go wrong in Wally Earth. Midnight oil was burning
get you your request from now and way back when. So, set with a wax, fellas. Loosen up and relax, fellas. See you back in Houston town again.
You know, it's fun to have been around, but I think of how it all started. I saw Sputnik going at a fantastic speed. I was doing a test project at Patuxent River, Maryland, on an aircraft that flew Mach 1. I saw this booster going by at night at Mach 25. I thought that was pretty goddamn speedy. Suddenly our country becomes involved in this space program. And we say, we're not going to be second. We're going to get into this thing. We're going to work on this very hard. So we brought to the Cape Vanguard, Kaboom, Vanguard, Kaboom. Suddenly the Soviets launched a vehicle with a dog by the name of Laika. They called it Mutnik. Some of the people are with me, I can tell. At any rate, we finally got Explorer into orbit. We became very excited about that. And about the time we got Explorer going into orbit, we began to realize that we better do some more. So we started putting monkeys and chimpanzees in orbit, really feeling pretty good about this. And we had another chimpanzee flight to go. And suddenly the Soviets launched Yuri Gagarin for one orbit around the world. It shattered us. It really broke our hearts. We had one more chimpanzee flight to go. We were getting thousands of telegrams from the ASPCA, the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. So we've launched Alan Shepard. Now, Alan's not here to defend himself, but you can tell that the love affair that Scott talked about, and I'm still wiping my eye, is a very, very warm relationship. Shepard went on to take a mulligan on the moon. Slayton went on to fly around with those Soviets by Alexei Leonov and Valery Kubachev. I was very thrilled because I arranged for the Apollo Soyuz crew to be inducted into our Aerospace Hall of Fame in San Diego. So you kind of take the Shepard thing to the other end. It's kind of an interesting group how the seven of us endured this whole space program. And I think of the people that were involved. I look at this big machine over our heads. I begin to think how many people were really involved in this and how a young president by the name of Kennedy convinced us that we go to the moon and back by the end of the decade. I have this other feeling about coming back from a Mercury flight with a friend of mine by the name of Joe Shira. We just celebrated our 56th anniversary last night. But you know about that senator who was involved in politics. Well, I was en route to the Oval Office when then Jack Kennedy was president. I'm being escorted there by young Robert Kennedy, and Joe and our two kids are sitting in the Oval Office. And Robert said, Commander Shira, we are interested in what political affiliations you might have. And without a Boston accent, I said, well, sir, I'm an engineer. I'm becoming something of a scientist. All of my decisions are based on facts. I find the transition to politics impossible. So if we tease each other, and Herschel knows what I'm saying, this is how we played the game. We are all very well bonded, and we have the privilege of loving each other and teasing each other, and to be with you tonight for the four survivors who made Atlas look pretty goddamn good. It's nice to be with you. Thank you.
That was Wally Shira speaking at the Kennedy Space Center at a function to mark the 50th anniversary of John Glenn's Mercury mission. Now, back to the Gemini 6A and 7 missions. There were many ground and shipboard stations around the world keeping track of the two spacecraft. The voice communications were fed back to the manned spacecraft center in Houston. One of the stations was at Carnarvon in Western Australia. The onboard systems were automatically monitored and radioed to Earth in a process called telemetry. Tele, as in remote, and metry, as in metering or measurement. At some point during the 14-day mission of Gemini 7, mission controllers detected a puzzling signal change in the telemetry. They asked the ground station at Carnarvon to investigate.
Flight Carnarvon.
Go ahead.
Roger, RF here on site reported that we had a sharp cutoff on TM signal strength, and then it came back on again fairly fast. We're going to take a closer look at it. Almost looked like he switched something over in the spacecraft or the transmitter dropped down momentarily.
Roger. Why don't you ask him if he made any switching in the TM?
Gemini 7, Carnarvon Capcom. Go ahead, Carnarvon 7. Roger, we noticed a rather sharp decrease in TM signal strength here. Did you do any switching on telemetry? We're dumping urine. Roger, understand. Is that better now? We just turned this dump switch off. Yeah, it was just a momentary drop out. It wasn't very long.
Right. Astronauts sometimes have what, to outsiders, may seem a strange sense of humor. Not only did they film this urine dump, they proudly screened this film at their post-mission briefing to hundreds of journalists.
You may notice the banding and the aerosol layers on the horizon. It's quite a spectacular thing. We can't photograph that as well as we're photographing this here, and I think I better have Jim explain what he's taking pictures of.
That's venting of liquid at night, otherwise known as a urine dump at twilight.
You might have noticed, if you looked very carefully, the constellation Orion.
It was morning on December 16, and Director Chris Kraft was monitoring the progress of the mission through his headphones. Suddenly, he was startled to hear a report from Tom Stafford aboard Gemini 6A. The 1950s and 1960s was a time of flying saucer mania with high public interest in UFOs.
I just want to know if you're up on the air today.
Roger.
Roger, Houston and Gemini 7, this is Gemini 6. We have an object, looks like a satellite, going from north to south, probably in a polar orbit. He's in a very low trajectory, traveling from north to south, and has a very high fineness ratio. Looks like it might even be a bonus. It's very low, looks like maybe 1/300%. Stand by, one. Looks like he's trying to signal something.
You're too much, Six.
That was Wally Schirra playing the harmonica and Tom Stafford tinkling the bells on that 10th day before Christmas. Initially startled by the prank, NASA officials quickly realized the public affairs advantage and publicized it.
This is Gemini Control Houston, 282 hours, 18 minutes into the flight of 7. 24 hours, 11 minutes into the flight of 6. For nearly 2 weeks now, we've been beaming daily music up to our pilots, 2 for most of the time, 4 for the last 24 hours. This morning, the pilots got their revenge. Listen carefully now to the early part of the stateside pass when the Gemini 6 crew reversed the process.
Blimus has solid TM on both spacecraft. Both spacecraft are go.
Gemini 7, Houston, did you call?
Houston, want to know if you're up on the air today?
Roger.
Roger, Houston, Gemini 7, this is Gemini 6. We have an object, looks like a satellite, going from north to south, up in a polar orbit. He's in a very low trajectory, traveling from north to south, and has a very high flatness ratio. Looks like it might even be about a stick. Very low, looks like maybe 1 to 300. Stand by 1 minute. Looks like he's trying to signal something.
At the post-mission press conference, reporters wanted to know how Wally had smuggled his harmonica into the tiny and cramped Gemini 6A spacecraft.
Question on another topic, Wally. Where did you carry the harmonica, and would you and Tom tell us any other personal articles that you carried?
The harmonica was quite a massive piece of gear, and I managed to stuff it in my pocket. In fact, I have it in my pocket now, and I'll display the massive piece of harmonica I had with me. You can see it was very difficult to stow.
Here's the jingle bells in my book.
I might add, for facility in using this device, I had dental floss, string to clean my teeth, and a bit of Velcro to attach it to any surface within the spacecraft. To not be too facetious, it was in my pocket. I have a pocket on both arms. One pocket has a rubberized neck dam for post-landing, and I put it in that very same pocket.
When a member of the press asked Wally to play Jingle Bells for them, NASA Administrator James Webb got quite cross, saying there were more serious issues to discuss.
Wally, this is Bill Hines. You did one experiment with that harmonica. We'd like to get a little more baseline data on. You were operating the harmonica in 0G and 100% oxygen at reduced pressure. And a few of us got together and provided the wherewithal for you to perform this as on 1G conditions at atmospheric pressure in the mixed gases that pass for air in Houston. Someone has it there in Houston, and I wonder if you would play Jingle Bells for us.
I think our purpose here is to give a report on this flight rather than to demonstrate the harmonica, and I suggest we move on to the next question.
Mr. Webb, this is Hines again. What is your objection to this?
I think I'd like to answer that for Mr. Webb. I think that Mr. Webb and everyone in the management area in NASA have been most gracious about our possibly labeled prank. Our intent was not a prank. It was to relieve the tension, to create some tension as we build up to it. I think we convinced Chris and many of the people on the flight control team that they did, in fact, have an unidentified flying object there. And I think the children of this country are happier for the fact that we might have seen something there. So I don't think there's any degree of criticism, but I don't think it's fair for us to perform again in this mixed gas environment. We enjoyed our performance at that time.
That struggle between levity and seriousness is something that NASA officials still find hard to cope with. Gemini 7 splashed down on 1965, December the 18th, having completed 206 orbits of the Earth in 330 hours. By the time of the press conferences, it was only days before Christmas. Buoyed by the success of the two missions, the feeling in Houston's manned spacecraft center was quite jubilant. Inspired by Wally and Tom's prank, one mission controller felt inspired to write a version of Jingle Bells as it might have appeared from the viewpoint of the Gemini 7 astronauts.
I think Mr. Abrams would like to say something.
I noted with some interest that you inaugurated the season of Christmas cheer a little earlier. And in the spirit of good humor and with attendance entirely voluntary, we have a Christmas carol to sing to you. following the tune of Jingle Bells, and you may hum along if you can. Jingle bells, cluttered wells, stowage all the way. Oh, what fun it is to watch the laser beams at play. Jingle bells, nasty smells, half unsuited too. If there were no transcript, we'd tell Kraft a thing or two. Dashing through the flight in a two-man, one-horse shay. Bach on UHF, laughing all the way. On through space we go, with our spirits bright. Frank has put the mistletoe around the fuel cell light. Jingle bells, sneezing spells are the doc's delight. Would he like to tuck us in at six tomorrow night? We have ointment for our nose and whiskers on our chin. Could we trade that box of pills for half a pint of gin? What a ball we'll have with Tom and Wally too. We'll turn off our radar set and let them eyeball through. We won't waste our ohms. We think we should undress. We'll like it so much better here. We'll let them face the press. Jingle bells, happy yells, one more week to go. Tell them all to go to hell except the RFO. Keep the fuel cells running dry and let us have some peace. LBJ, our record set, and we will go to Greece.
Bravo. Are you going to publish that?
Very good. Very good.
Hey, could we have a copy of that?
Copy of that for the...
I think that'd be great. I think that's great.
Thank you.
We ought to have that
well done.
Tape.
Yeah. We'll have it.
Okay, you have... Stand by. They have issued a challenge. You know that?
That version of Jingle Bells contains a lot of insider references, so let me unpick it for you.
Oh, what fun it is to watch the laser beams at play.
One of the many experiments that Frank Borman and Jim Lovell were asked to do was to shine laser beams toward ground stations. This was to test the efficacy of using lasers for space-to-ground communications. In the event, the link was poor.
Jingle bells, nasty smells, half unsuited too.
The Gemini spacecraft was very cramped. It was likened at the time to the front seats of a Volkswagen Beetle. Think about it. You and a companion sitting shoulder to shoulder, unable to open the window, sleeping in those cramped seats, eating, and yes, doing your ablutions, both numbers 1 and numbers 2. Unable to wash, not allowed to shave, for 2 weeks. And I leave that and the issue of nasty smells to your imagination.
If there were no transcript, we'd tell Kraft a thing or two.
Christopher Kraft was the head of mission operations in charge of a team of flight directors.
Dashing through the flight in a two-man, one-horse shay.
As we have noted, the Gemini spacecraft was a very cramped two-man craft in which the astronauts sat side by side with their shoulders touching.
Bach on UHF.
Most of the communications between the Gemini spacecraft and ground control were via very high frequency radio, otherwise known as VHF. Southern FM broadcasts on VHF.
Frank has put the mistletoe around the fuel cell light.
Frank Borman was the commander of Gemini 7. A fuel cell is a device that combines hydrogen and oxygen, producing an electrical current and, as a waste product, water. Early in the mission, a faulty warning had indicated the fuel cells had failed. In fact, the cells worked fine throughout the mission, increasing confidence that similar fuel cells could power the Apollo moon craft.
And whiskers on our chin.
During the Gemini missions, the astronauts were not allowed to shave, lest whiskers float into sensitive electronic equipment.
Could we trade that box of pills for half a pint of gin?
Alcohol was prohibited on the United States spacecraft, hence this joke about gin.
What a ball we'll have with Tom and Wally too.
A reference to Tom Stafford and Wally Schirra, who were due to fly in Gemini 6A to rendezvous with Frank Borman and Jim Lovell in Gemini 7.
We'll turn off our radar set and let them eyeball through.
In order to find Gemini 7, Gemini 6A had a radar that was able to ping the target spacecraft from a range of 4 kilometres.
We won't waste our ohms.
Ohms, in this case, is not a measure of electrical current. It is instead OAMS, the Orbit Attitude Maneuvering System. These were thrust engines used to orient the spacecraft.
LBJ, our record set.
LBJ was the nickname for Lyndon Baines Johnson, the Texan who was President of the United States. In later years, the manned spacecraft center was renamed the Johnson Space Center in his honor. With those explanations, let's again listen to Mr. Abrams with new understanding.
Jingle bells, cluttered wells, stowage all the way. Oh, what fun it is to watch the laser beams at play. Jingle bells, nasty smells, half unsuited too. If there were no transcript, we'd tell craft a thing or two. Dashing through the flight in a two-man, one-horse shay. Back on UHF, laughing all the way. On through space we go, with our spirits bright. Frank has put the mistletoe around the fuel cell light. Jingle bells, sneezing spells are the doc's delight. Would he like to tuck us in at 6 tomorrow night? We have ointment for our nose and whiskers on our chin. Could we trade that box of pills for half a pint of gin? What a ball we'll have with Tom and Wally too. We'll turn off our radar set and let them eyeball through. We won't waste our ohms. We think we should undress. We'll like it so much better here. We'll let them face the press. Jingle bells, happy yells, one more week to go. Tell them all to go to hell except the RFO. Keep the fuel cells running dry and let us have some peace. LBJ, our record set, and we will go to Greece.
Bill Dana was a popular American comedian. One of his famous routines was The Astronaut. At the John Glenn Mercury Atlas 6 50th Anniversary Gala event at the Kennedy Space Center, Jim Lovell introduced Wally Schirra and Bill Dana to reprise the skit. Listen out for references to the 7 Mercury astronauts. For example, mention of the Winter Olympics is a nod to John Glenn, and the deep sea diving line is about Scott Carpenter, who became an aquanaut after his astronaut days.
Now I want to introduce Wally again, and he has something special to offer. Thank you.
I am known as, on rare occasions, as Hose B. But it turned out Jim Lovell was supposed to make a better introduction to me, so I'll read it anyway. At liftoff at Mercury Redstone 3 on May 5th, 1961, the first words between our dear departed brothers, Deke Slayton as Capcom and Al Shepard as America's first man in space were, "Okay, Jose, you're on your way." The Jose referred to was, well, he still is, the comedian Bill Dana, the reluctant astronaut, Jose Jimenez. Throughout the early days, many such Jose references were made in stressful times during flights. Bill became our pal early on and has been steadily with us, including sitting on the advisory board of the Astronaut Scholarship Fund. Here now with famed astronaut straight man, I'm being introduced now, Wally Schirra, will now say, "I cannot think of a more memorable way to continue our activities than to present a person whose multifaceted exploits have captured the imagination of the entire planet. His amazing and gifted versatility has taken him from outer space to inside our hearts. A giant of such renown, we all know him as the grand old man of everything." The press has asked me to pose these questions you're about to hear to this giant. Let me say with pride, here he is. Your name, please.
My name, Jose Jimenez. Oh, so happy they like my name.
It's very good to see you here.
It's good to see me any place these days.
I see you've brought some of your space equipment. Mm-hmm. What is that called, a crash helmet?
Oh, I hope not.
Were you a participant at any of the rocket launchings at Cape Canaveral?
I was a participant at any of the rocket launchings at Cape Canaveral. I was there when they opened the door into the nose cone, and then they took that little mouse and they put the mouse inside the nose cone, and then they closed the door.
Try to pull yourself together.
I'll be okay.
What do you consider the most important thing in rocket travel?
To me, the most important thing in the rocket travel is the blast off.
The blast off?
I always take a blast before I take off. Otherwise, I wouldn't get near that for slugging a thing.
I see. And after that, what is the procedure on taking off?
The procedure on taking off is first you got to put on a stepped-up double dynamo reversible boosters. Then you got to activate the decompressor activator, and then you put on the ultramagnetic degaussing system.
Then you're really up there?
That opens the door. Lets out that little mouse so John Glenn will have something to talk about.
Let's change the subject.
Good. If you know how.
I know how. It says it right here.
Yeah.
I see that you were at the Winter Olympics where John Glenn carried the torch.
Yeah. He carried. That's right. You know, he won the 1,000-yard dash.
John Glenn did that?
Yeah. He backed into the torch behind him.
Wouldn't that burn your ass, Trinot?
There must be a Wally Schirra around here.
Now, you've had some Winter Olympic experience, haven't you?
Yes, I had Winter Olympic experience. I was on the bobsled. I was a skier.
Now, wait a minute. Were you a skier or were you a bobsled racer?
I was the boat. I was both of them.
You were both?
Yeah, I was the skier to go on the bobsled.
They do go fast.
I was a skier to go on the bus. Better get to the next joke real fast or I'm going to back into a torch.
There's something about backing into a torch.
Yeah. Keep on going.
Mr. Jimenez.
About to be attacked.
We know you are.
Fits the profile.
No, I'm, known as a smart astronaut.
Yes, you are one of the smartest of you.
Now, we know you are the eighth Mercury astronauts out of a possible seven.
That is right. Proud to
be. In your early orbiting, did you pass the Russian capsule?
I didn't even swallow it.
I'd like your reaction on the situation with the Russian space program and the potential of a joint Russian-U.S. mission to Mars.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, well, I came up with a very good idea how to get to Mars, you know.
Well, what's the idea?
Well, the Russians and the United States people, we have a big party, and we invite the Martians. Then after the party, we follow them home.
That idea is inane, insipid, and egregiously ludicrous.
Well, thanks. Most people hate it.
I see you're involved with the training plans for the manned spaceflight to Mars.
Yeah, I'm involved with the training plans for the manned space to Mars. Boy, it's going to be a rough program, a rough road to hoe for those guys. Some of them will make it and go on to great things, and others will lose.
What about the losers?
They get their ass shot to Mars.
Okay, let's skip the subject.
Okay, if you know the how.
I thought you said skipping is
skipping
exercise.
Is good exercise. Don't get at me with details, Wally.
Now, what were you before an astronaut?
Happy. I was so ecstatic, yeah.
Well, now, let's review some of your other daring exploits as a deep-sea diver. You must have had some frightening experiences.
Oh, I had the very frightening experiences as a deep-sea diver. You know, one time I was down deep in the water, you know, with the hard hat on and the glass window and the fishies go swimming by, and the pipe goes all the way to the captain on the top of the water. That captain told me the scariest thing you could ever tell to a diver down deep in the water.
What's that?
Come on up, the boat is sinking. Scared the ship right from over me there.
Okay, now, as a wild animal trainer,
yeah,
what is your most important equipment?
As a wild animal trainer, the most important equipment is the track shoes.
Track shoes?
Yeah, track. Once I made it from the middle of the ring to the nearest exit in 9.5.
9.5? That must be a record.
No, Lion made it in 9.4. It caught me right by the threshold.
Well, we probably should turn to your mastery of the Oriental martial arts. Is it true that a man your size can defeat a much larger person?
Absolutely, Wally. One time this guy came after me. He was about 7 feet 12 inches tall, weighed about 900 pounds. I stopped him with one finger.
How did you do that?
Pull the trigger. The mysteries of the Orient.
You were also in the field of medicine. Is that true?
That is right. I was a specialist as what is called a genealogist, and I was a very good genealogist.
Bill, you don't mean genealogist, you mean gynecologist. A genealogist looks up your background.
Wasn't my way a nicer way of putting it? I think so. Go ahead.
I also heard you're a cattle rancher.
Yep, own my own cattle ranch. The name of my ranch is the Bar 9 Circle Z, Rocking O, Flying W, Lazy R, Crazy 2, Happy 7, Bar 17, Parallelogram 4, Octagon 9, Trapezoid 6, Ranch O.
Do you have many cattle?
No, not many survived the branding.
Now your mastery was so
you
much.
You talk about screaming cows. Those were really mad cows. 12 acres of flaming flunkin out there, as far as the eye could see, was a barbecue, yeah.
I didn't read that. Okay.
Okay.
Your mastery of so much and your vast wealth must have made you popular with the ladies.
You're kidding? I am listed in the Jello pages under creative playthings. You know, a Playgirl magazine?
Mm-hmm.
I was a centerfold in Playgirl magazine.
Now that's quite daring. Mm-hmm. What did you use to cover up?
The staple was sufficient. You too?
Well, sir, fortunately our time is up. Let me ask you one final question.
Okay.
Where would you rank yourself in the terms of importance in the history of space travel?
Importance in the whole history of, well, probably only number three, because ahead of me would be George Washington and Benjamin Franklin, and would come me. So I'm only number three in of importance in all history.
Mr. Jimenez, Washington and Franklin had nothing to do with space travel.
I'm number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Dana.
Thank you, Wally. Thank you very much. I just want to say God bless all of our astronauts and God bless the United States of America.
God bless Kenya.
Thank you, Wally, and thank you, Jose.
That was Wally Schirra and Bill Dana at the Kennedy Space Center. And that concludes our look back at the Gemini 6A and Gemini 7 missions 55 years ago this week.